Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 30th day of November, Anno Domini 2024, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things you choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. One of the fastest monopoly trials on record wound down Monday as U.S. District Court Judge Leonie Brekema heard closing arguments on Google's alleged monopoly in a case over the company's ad tech. Department of Justice lawyer Aaron Teitelbaum kicked things off by telling Brekema that Google rigged ad auctions, allegedly controlling multiple parts of services used to place ads all over the internet, unfairly advantaging itself in three markets. Google is once, twice, three times a monopolist, said not Lionel Richie and the Commodores, but DOJ lawyer Teitelbaum, while reinforcing that these are the markets that make the free and open internet possible. Teitelbaum likened Google to a predator, preying on publishers that allegedly had no viable other options, beg your pardon, for ad revenue, but to stick with Google's products. An executive for News Corp testified that the news organization felt it was being held hostage because it risked losing $9 million in 2017 if it walked away from Google's advertising platform. Brekema is expected to rule in the coming months. Some analysts predict that the DOJ's success in proving Google's monopoly in search will not influence her decision, but she has confirmed that she would consider the DOJ's request to break up Google's ad business. That means Google could be facing a second major threat to its overall ad revenue or its overall revenue after the DOJ recently pushed to force the sale of Chrome to fix Google's search monopoly. The ad tech division generated $31 billion last year for Alphabet, Google's parent company, or 10% of its sales. $31 billion was 10% of its sales. I would take 1% of its sales, personally. Mm-hmm. The DOJ wants Brekema to order Google to sell off Google Ad Manager, the opaque ad exchange that the DOJ alleged has such little transparency that it allows Google to charge monopoly prices for ads. Brekema has said that she expected to use the DOJ's closing arguments today to answer her remaining questions. Experts following the trial repeatedly noted that the 80-year-old judge quickly grasped the technical concepts involved, despite the case being especially laden with industry jargon. Which way the judge is leaning remains clear. So our poll of the week. Well, there's actually, I should mention, that India and Canada are also looking at Google as a monopoly and looking to break them up. So So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google a monopoly? And your choices are yes, heck yes, nope, I use an alternative search engine, and wait, you can search? So far we have 26 votes in the poll. This is an easy one this week, so I expect a lot of people to vote in the poll, particularly all you folks who listen to the podcast, which is fixed, by the way. Podcast is fixed. I fixed it the day after. Well, I fixed it on Monday, and it works now. And you should get the real latest episodes. So I expect you in gratitude to vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. You can also give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
I wonder how many other phones you just set off.
Why? What did I do?
When you started reading that, you said, okay, And all of a sudden, I'm hearing this beep in my ear through my hearing aid saying, okay, unlock your phone.
Yeah, right. Sorry, everybody. In a little while, we'll talk to Apple's assistant, and then we'll talk to Amazon's just to even it all out.
Yeah, not feel neglected.
Yeah. It's an interesting question, isn't it? On the one hand, having a single large marketplace where you can place an ad is a good thing, right? Because it means you only have to go to one place to hit a whole lot of people. On the other hand, having a single large marketplace means that other players don't get an even break. And, you know, that's the point of an open system is everybody gets a break. But so far, at least, Google has been really the number one choice for doing. I mean, everybody talks about Facebook Marketplace and things like that. But really, the most people you're going to hit, the best bang for the buck you're actually going to get is a Google ad.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no question of that.
Google says that their search wouldn't be as good without the advertising to know what you like so they can give you the right search results. And how fast did we all switch from Ask Jeeves or AltaVista when Google Search came out?
Well, that's
instantly.
Just it. You know,
Big time.
Yeah. Google, in terms of search, Google, again, utterly enormous, but that's because they had a good product. Now, I personally would say the product is not as good as it used to be, since the first half dozen choices are ads now. And not really the results that I want. I tend to just jump to page two pretty regularly.
Yep.
But still, you know, Google for decades was the search engine.
But see, I've gone the other way. I've wound up doing more searching through DuckDuckGo. That, I mean, if I don't want to be inundated after I do that search on stuff that I'm looking for, even though I might have already purchased it, 3 months later, I'm still getting inundated with the stupid ads on a product that I already bought or no longer want to know about. DuckDuckGo eliminates that.
Right. DuckDuckGo is real privacy. Their search results are not always as spot on as Google's.
No.
But they're much more private.
Mm-hmm.
And I... Believe me when I tell you I appreciate that. I got annoyed again yesterday. I purchased a small item for someone's stocking, and I won't say whose because both of them are home tonight. Today, I don't think they're listening, but they're home.
Does your family listen?
No, I don't think
Mine
they
doesn't.
Do.
Mine don't.
I don't think they do. But I purchased a small item, and immediately, we found something you might like, and it's four of the same thing. No, I like, yes, I do like it. Yes, thank you. I like it, and I already bought it. And you should know that, because I bought it from you.
Yep. Well, same for me. I wound up using the DuckDuckGo, because just a few days ago, went to use my microwave, and all of a sudden I pushed the button, and poop! Totally goes black. Turns out, microwave is shot. So I didn't want to go searching on Google because then I'm going to be inundated from now until next summer with microwaves that are going on sale. So I went over to DuckDuckGo, and gee, when I turned back to Google, I don't see any of the ads for that.
Right. It's got to be a pandemic because my microwave also went out this week.
Oh, really?
The clock is still on. You can push all the buttons and they make noise, just nothing else happens.
Well, mine just went totally dead. Nothing.
So, yeah.
Have you tried plugging it in?
I did.
Unplug it and plug it back in again.
Right, exactly.
Your name, please?
That's a... but yeah, there's... It's an interesting question.
Matt, where are you
and
going?
We'd very much like to know what you think. So go to soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you.
Hold on.
And vote in the poll. It only takes a moment or two. And it makes me happy. And you want to make me happy, don't you? So do it now. And we're going to go to the phone in just Dave just dropped his pen, so we don't know who it is we're talking to. We're about to. Hold on. He's getting there. He's getting there. Okay, thank you very much. It's a long hike from that chair to the table.
Yeah, it is.
A total one step.
It's very
long-handed. All right. He's back in the chair now. And we're going to talk to Matt from Batavia, New York. What's up, Matt?
Okay. This question is directed towards Steve Ray because I know he's a Mac guy.
He's a Mac guy.
I bought a MacBook. You know, I believe in purchasing, you know, use electronics, recycle electronics, computers and stuff. So I got a password thing on the MacBook. It says, enter password. I don't know the password. It's a 2012 MacBook Pro with the DVD drive. The only reason I wanted it because I had a DVD drive. And I'm going to do my digital Nikon, digital SDR photography with this. But I'm stuck out of the computer. How do I get the lock thing off of the computer on a MacBook Pro 2012?
Call the original owner you bought it from and have them remove it. They should have erased the computer before they sold it.
There's no other back way to do that?
Not always. Sometimes if you can show proof of purchase at the Apple Store, Apple can reset your Apple password, but not necessarily the computer password.
Bring it into the Apple Store is what you're saying, basically.
You need the original proof of purchase.
The original one, not your proof of purchase.
Hold on. I bought it used off of shopgoodwill.com. It was a used computer. It came from like a storage shed.
So you have to go back to them and tell them to go back to the owner to get the password.
No, that's not going to work.
Return it and buy another one that doesn't have a password on it.
Yeah, unfortunately, one of the really good things about Apple is that they have amazing security on their passwords. The bad news for someone like you is that you cannot unlock it. Now, you can erase the hard drive.
I was going to say, wipe the hard drive.
Yeah, you can sometimes erase the hard drive.
How do I do that? How do I restart the whole, full factory restore it?
Boot the recovery partition, and there's a disk utility to erase it from. However, if the computer has File Vault encryption turned on, you need the original password. And if it has Apple ID lock on, you have to have the original Apple password.
Wow, it sounds like a lot of work. All right, guys, I appreciate
this. This is all mostly to prevent theft. So if someone steals your computer, they can't get into your stuff without your password. So if anyone ever wants to sell a computer, make sure you erase it first before you sell it.
Right,
and shame on the store for selling a computer that has a password on it already. They should have checked that.
I think
you
said it came out of a storage shed. So, somebody did
it was a
storage
auction on shopgoodwill.com, actually.
Yeah.
So they should have erased it or got the password before they sold it. So basically, they've sold you an unusable computer. You need to return it to them.
No. Is there a way to put it in a new hard drive or just reset it instantly? Is there any way? Like, how can I do that?
What year did you say it was?
2012.
2012? Does it have a optical drive?
It's an aluminum MacBook Pro 2012 with a DVD.
Okay, then, yeah, you can remove the drive and put a new drive in.
All right. I'll see what I could do.
Yeah, you can also remove the drive and reformat it on another machine, right?
Depends if the file vault encryption is turned on.
Right. Okay, sorry, what'd you say, Matt?
I think the best advice is, I can't pretty much get away from this password screen, so I'm going to take it to the MacBook store and see what they say. We'll work from there.
Yep.
You know?
Yep,
There's no such thing as problems. There's only solutions.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, you're going to have to prove ownership of one way or the other, because we have people trying to bring in stolen computers to us all the time. Yeah, I forgot my password. Can you reset it? Show us your original receipt.
All right, I got you. Yep. All right, I appreciate the help, guys.
Have a nice day. Thanks, Matt. Now, from my point of view, could he have installed Linux on it?
Soundbite's your name?
Probably.
Okay, Andy, hold on.
2012 wouldn't have probably, no, it could, it still could. So iCloud Act, so there's two layers of security. There's the encryption on the drive itself that you can get around by erasing it. And then there's the iCloud activation lock. So if that machine is registered to someone's Apple ID, that person has to remove it from their Apple ID.
Thank you.
And that they were both methods to help protect your data if your computer gets stolen.
So you mean even if I replace the drive, it won't work?
If it's activated to someone's Apple ID. Because that's...
It happens in firmware.
In firmware, yeah.
Interesting. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. What's up, Andy?
Hi, guys. Two questions. I have Windows 8 Pro that I had bought originally and then upgraded to 10 and several different versions of 10. When I upgraded to 10, actually I upgraded to 10 Pro, did they put a product key somewhere on the hard drive? Or do I still have to use the holograph from 8 Pro?
You're using the product key from 8 will work on 10.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what happened. When you upgraded to 10, it used the same product key. What it won't do is work on 11.
But if you put a new drive in or erase the computer, it may not find that key.
You don't want to do 11 on a machine that ran 8 anyways. It's too old.
Right.
Well, no, but I'm wondering if there's an upgrade path to follow, or am I just going to have to bite the bullet?
It is unlikely that the Windows 8 product key will work on Windows 11.
And the thing of it is, Andy, it's going to be so slow, you're going to pick that thing up and want to throw it out a window. You're better Linux on it.
There's a lot of other stuff going on in the background I won't bore you with. But I'm just wondering, so it's if I change out the processor and or motherboard, it's not going to let me boot it up anyway, is it?
Yeah, it's going to assume it's a new computer, and you're going to have to mm-hmm. go through a lot of hoops with Microsoft
and stick to
re-register it.
Usually, and if it was a Windows 8 machine, I would definitely stick to Windows 10, at least for another year.
Yeah, even if you in this case, okay, so you're looking at two things. Anytime you replace that much hardware, you're going to have to reactivate Windows.
Which usually involves calling them on the phone.
Right.
Yeah.
In your case, you simply cannot use the Windows 8 key to activate Windows 11, so it doesn't matter what you do to the hardware. You're going to have to buy a new copy of Windows if you want Windows 11 on that new machine.
Okay. I was told by somebody who's done it that there's a way to download Windows 11 and an ISO file, and you put it on either a thumb drive or a CD.
Yeah.
And then you go, there's a website you go to, it's $25, and it's a legit Microsoft website.
No, it isn't.
Yeah,
not for $25. Windows 11 is, what, $200 for the home version?
Yeah. Microsoft is having a sale right now where they are selling it for like $120. So I don't think there's a $25 option anywhere.
It was strictly a product code. You had to do all the work and jump through all the hoops and do all the
copying. So, no, they're not going to sell a license for $25.
Product key is the gold.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Yeah. So according to Microsoft, the Windows 11 Home USB is out of stock.
If you wanted them to send you a USB.
Right. To just download, it's $139 for Windows 11 Home on the Microsoft Store.
Right.
Yeah, well, I was told to stay to Pro, not Home. But
well, Pro okay. lets you join a domain, which yep. most home users don't need.
Yeah, you don't get much. You don't get much else
for Pro, for a home network.
Yeah.
Okay, because when I did 8 originally, I had to upgrade to Pro because I couldn't get the thing to see my network in the house.
Well, yeah, 8 had some issues as far as the networking in there.
That they fixed.
So I just went to Pro and stayed with Pro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now that you're on Pro, you have to upgrade to the next Pro. It won't let you. Unless you erase the drive, then you could install Home. So Windows 11 Pro mm-hmm. download is $199. There may be a way to retrieve your Microsoft license key by logging into your Microsoft account if you registered that license with your Microsoft account to begin with.
Pretty sure I did.
Then you should be able to log in and get it. But again, a Windows 8 key will not let you activate Windows 11.
And the thing that I would worry about, Andy, is you spend all this time and effort to go to 11, and on a machine is that's that old. Well,
he's talking about replacing the motherboard.
That's not going to be an issue.
Might as well just get a whole new computer with the Windows 11 already on it. If you're going to do that, then because if you get whole other motherboard,
unless he looks just like tinkering.
Yeah, well, you've also got to get the processor. I mean, the processor. You're also going to have to get the memory chips because it's a whole different style memory. So you might as well just spend another $40, get a different case, or use that case.
It's the power supply connectors are probably different.
Yep. So you're going to be throwing a lot of money into it that you can just
building your own PC isn't as easy as it used to be.
No. Like I say,
it's fun if that's what you like to do.
Yeah, I encourage tinkering, but I wouldn't throw, a lot of money into an old machine that, is going to wind up costing you more than if you just went out and bought it. Say, even a bare bones box, and then build it up from there. So say you just got a, an i5 that'll run Windows 11 with gig.
I'll save you the trouble. I've got an i7
Beautiful.
With an Asus motherboard, Asus Prime motherboard.
Sweet.
It's got the SATA connector so I can maintain my DVD drives.
Okay.
We've got Corsair RAM coming, new optical drive because they're dirt cheap.
Mm-hmm.
I hit the Black Friday jackpot here, and a new spinning drive because the computer is basically 10 years old.
Yeah.
And knock on wood, it's still running.
It doesn't owe you anything.
So, it doesn't. I built it, and I've never had a lick of trouble with it, and we're doing fine. Now I've just got to figure out whether I'm just going to go straight to Linux, don't pass go, don't screw around with Windows 11, or if I can get to 11 decently on the existing hard drive, then when I put in the new one, I'll go right to Linux with that, but it at least gets me the platform up and running when I put the new Play Toys in it. And I did the whole thing for, with tax for $860.
Nice. But I am telling you.
Now I've just got to see if the power supply in it will connect to the motherboard.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I just figured that was still the same.
Well, but maybe not. But I am telling you that when the Windows 8 product key will not activate Windows 11.
It's not going to work. That's fine. That's fine. I just wanted to know.
Yep.
And I thought when I had put this in originally, there was a folder in there someplace with a product key in it. And I didn't know if it was specific to the 10 or if it was the old one from 8. And I was going to do some research, but I had to figure out where the hell they hid the damn thing.
No, it is likely that, you could upgrade from 8 to 10. So if that's what you did, it retained the same product key.
Okay.
And that's in system settings. What's it under? About. System about.
Okay.
We'll show you the key.
Now, did you say you ordered a new power supply, Andy?
Not yet.
Okay. Because quite often, wasn't sure. Round 8 or so, the power supplies, they wound up coming up with, you have this long plug that you hooked up for the power.
That's when the CPU needed a direct power.
And then there was another smaller four-prong plug, square, that you had to put elsewhere on the motherboard to clip it in. And I don't think the 8 had that extra plug in it. I could be wrong, because the models kept changing, so did the cases and everything else.
Yeah, well, it was
No, good luck, though, buddy. M. If you can do it more, we encourage tinkering. Get out there, play around with it. If you mess up, you just try it more.
Okay, before we run into the break.
Yep, we're getting up to it. Hurry up.
What's the difference between going in and doing an X copy on an area and putting a new folder on an external drive versus doing a backup?
All right, hold on to that thought, and we'll come back to you right after this.
Okay.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. And we'll see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I always forget there's no announcement. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Andy from Greece on the line. What's up, Andy? Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay, so X-Copy versus backup?
Yeah, I mean...
How do you back up?
Backup is a concept. What program do you use? X-Copy could be a backup program.
Well, that's what I've been using it as. I set the parameters, and it goes down through, and then when I do it the next time, I just tell it to do anything that's changed since the last... I put in the parameter that says, just do it since the last copy.
And that is a backup, absolutely.
Okay, now, some backup programs encrypt data.
Yep.
And other programs don't. And
yeah.
If it doesn't, is it just doing the same thing Xcopy's doing?
Pretty much.
But automatically?
Yes.
And it might be using Xcopy at the low.
It might, right, exactly. Yeah,
behind the scenes.
So Xcopy has a lot of parameters and a lot of futzing. With a backup program, the interface is often easier, especially if it's a program designed for novices.
Yeah, and Steve is right. Many of them use Xcopy in the background.
Okay. Well, that mystery solved then. If I just do a regular backup and I don't encrypt it, then it's just the folder that's out wherever I put it, and it looks just like, hopefully, looks just like my hard drive does.
It should, yes, absolutely. Now, it may not work exactly like your hard drive does because it's in a different place. So let's say you had stuff on the C drive and you backed it up to the D drive. There may be pointers in some programs that say that instead of saying go to the C drive and do this, it says go down one level and do this. That may not be the same on the other drive that it is on your drive.
And if you're doing this,
if I'm going in manually to search through the folders and I know where I'm looking.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. In terms of the structure of what you copied, it will be identical.
And that can be different with some backup programs. Some backup programs aren't human readable. They do a compressed backup into a single file, which doesn't take up as much space on the drive, but then you can't read it without doing a restore.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at.
Yeah, that just depends on the backup program you're using.
On the backup program you're using. Okay. So I'm going to find out is to try it.
Well, one of the things that we always suggest, of course, is multiple backups. So you could use Xcopy for one backup so you can get at it quick, and a program that compresses data to another backup that you have but you don't necessarily use, but it takes up less space.
Space isn't a problem.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
But you do want multiple backups in multiple places.
Definitely.
And you've got that list at asknick.com/backup.php.
Exactly right.
That explains a lot of it and lists a bunch of the different backup programs.
Okay. Excellent.
Excellent.
All right. Well, we'll be chatting with you tomorrow night.
Perfect. Thanks.
Yep, thank you much.
And that reminds me, Andy has reminded me that tomorrow night is the lounge. So all you lounge lizards, head on over to soundbites.org/lounge at 9 o'clock. And the link will be there. So if you're there before 9, refresh the page at 9. And you will see the link to the chat. It is a video chat. You do not have to use your camera. You don't even have to use your microphone. We respect your privacy, but you can then lurk and listen, Or you can join in and ask questions and join in the general mayhem. It goes on. That's 9 o'clock Sunday nights. 9 o'clock Eastern time Sunday nights for an hour. So we hope to see you there. It's a fun time in general. And in the meantime, we will go back to the phones and talk to Brian from Walworth, New York. What's up, Brian?
Hi there. I've got a question for you guys. I know that unless your crystal ball works better than my crystal ball, there's really no answer for it, but I really like your thoughts anyway. Listening to Nick's Computer Minute recently about the threatened tariffs and needing to upgrade, maybe think about upgrading your computers, I've got a four-year-old HP laptop that's working fine. It's a, you know, sort of mid-level. I don't game on it. I use it for mostly for internet and word processing, a little bit of spreadsheet work. Trying to decide if it's worth, you know, 4 years old. What's the usual life expectancy of a middle grade laptop?
Any thoughts on that? Okay, who made that laptop?
HP. Hewlett-Packard.
They're pretty solid.
We often see the higher branded laptops, which generally cost a little more to purchase, are a little better quality and tend to do last a little longer.
A little more stable.
It often becomes what program you buy that needs a faster processor. So what Windows version do you have on it?
Oh, just Windows 10. Which
just
I'm
10.
Perfectly happy with.
Yeah, so if you upgrade to 11, it may not run as well on a four-year-old computer as it would on
a
newer one.
And I don't plan to upgrade to 11 until I'm forced to do it.
Yep.
I'm perfectly happy with 10.
Right. Well, they are going to force you in a year.
Oh, I know. I'm aware of that.
So at that point, it may be a requirement for you to get a new computer.
Plus, it pays $30.
And let's face it, if the tariffs do go into effect, they will be in effect for at least 4 years.
Right.
So you'll have an 8-year-old computer when you come out of that.
Right. But again, I sort of hate because again, right now it's working fine. I mean, I should knock on wood when I say that because, you know, tomorrow it could die, but and if you got in your guys' experience, what's the typical life expectancy of a laptop?
Well,
I know there's no guarantee, but what do you say?
About a week before you need to replace it.
Yeah, right.
Die.
Yeah. So what we have seen is the industry says 20% chance a year.
All right. That's
what that would say is that it's going to die in 5 years. But I'm running an 8-year-old computer myself right now.
Yeah, yeah. Some die in a year, some die in 15
right.
years.
Yeah. So
I understand that. Okay.
It's Russian roulette.
And I have replaced the power supply on it, but that's it.
Yeah. Well, you know? It's the typical bell-shaped curve. I mean, the mean may be
right.
4 or 5 years, but...
Right, yep. And so where are you on that curve? Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. I started this off by saying there is no answer to this.
Right, you're absolutely right.
Your thoughts.
You're right. And, you know, a computer that you leave on is less likely to die than a computer you turn on and off regularly. A computer that has a spinning hard drive is more likely to die than a computer with an SSD.
Yeah.
A computer that is well ventilated and has good open spots and the vents aren't packed with dog hair and everything else are going to last longer than one that is overheating and having a problem. So
right.
There's a million variables that we can't answer on any individual basis.
Right. Okay.
But be aware of weird noises, because that's often an indication of that the spinning hard drive is starting to die.
Over here, clicking.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, again, this
you're
is an
on.
SSD.
Oh, that's good. So we always thought that SSDs would have a longer life than spinning drives, but they don't. When you write data to an SSD cell, you're basically burning through the resistance in between the cells. So every time you write data, you're damaging the drive a little bit. So big companies like Google and Backblaze, they posted studies that there's virtually no difference between spinning hard drives and solid state drives in longevity, about 20% per year failure rate. Most of the time with SSDs, there's a overcapacity. What do they call that? So you buy a 500 you buy a 500 gig drive and there's 520 gigs available. So when one cell dies, they can remap it to another cell.
Right.
But eventually, too many cells will die, and you'll start losing capacity and losing speed as it has to run around looking for remapped cells.
And that's one of the interesting things about SSDs. I know this doesn't help much with Brian, but it's I might as well make the point while we're here. If you have two SSDs, one that is your home directory and one that is your data directory, the home directory one will last longer because once you've installed your software, the theory at least is you don't do much additional installation. Whereas your data directory, you're constantly adding and removing and changing data on that. Anyway, right. Brian, the thing is we have no answer for you.
Well, the answer is it depends.
Mm-hmm. So, as I said, I started off by saying I know there's no answer to this. I still just wanted your thoughts because I'm debating whether, you know, I can afford it. I mean, it's a big chunk of money, but I can afford to replace it. But it just also galls me for the idea of replacing a perfectly functional machine.
I am in your camp here.
I was going to say, you're preaching to the choir here.
A lot of times you can pass it down to the family or to a church or community organization.
Yeah. I was just talking to Dave about the fact that I got to get a new computer myself. Mine's only 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, it'd be 11 or 12 years old by the time the tariffs may or may not go away. So, again, we don't have tariffs yet, but they have been threatened. And if you're looking at a computer that's a few years old, add 4 years to that and see how confident you are about it continuing to exist.
That's the thing. I would be very surprised at eight years old that this thing is still running fine like it is now.
Right.
And it's possible.
And it's likely that the American computer companies, Apple, HP, there were stories about Tim Cook doing this during Trump's first presidency.
Tim Apple,
yeah. You don't want to put tariffs on our products because that would really undermine the
U.S. the
economy.
Other side.
Yeah.
Will they actually happen?
Yeah.
They'll exclude this thing.
But you call it an American computer company. Where do they get every single component in the
right.
machine?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Well, Apple is opening plants in Brazil and India just so they don't have to rely on China.
Right. No, I understand that. Yeah. But they're not open yet.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's an interesting issue and it's an interesting problem. And there is no definitive answer. Our answer to you is good luck and God bless.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Good luck, Brian.
All the clickbaity headlines. PC Mag is saying laptop prices could increase by 45%. So you're going to click that and try to read what it says. We have no idea what's going to happen.
Well, exactly right.
But they have to write a story.
And that's my point. We do not have an idea. But the indication is that if you're going to buy a laptop, do it now.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not that pans out, I don't have a crystal ball. But... You know, given the immediate future of the American political system, it is quite likely that tariffs will at least be attempted.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're thinking about buying a new computer, do it now rather than later.
And don't politicians know that tariffs hurt the American public?
Some do.
Yeah.
Yes. We'll see. Tariffs have generally not been a great idea. Large amounts of tariffs have not been a great idea. There have been individual tariffs that have been, but large amounts of tariffs generally have not been. But we're not a political show, so we'll go back to the phones and talk to Don from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Don?
Hello. Two questions. One, how do you compare the effectiveness of AVG uninstaller compared to, I think, one of your favorites, Revo uninstaller? Which do you prefer? I have AVG protection on my Windows 10 PC.
generally speaking, one program that tries to do a bunch of things isn't as good at each of those things as individual programs that do only that thing. And Revo Uninstaller has a much bigger history than AVG Uninstaller, but I don't have any direct comparisons.
Okay, but that makes sense. Second question. I have some drivers that need updating. What is the best way or program to do that? Again, with a PC, Windows 10.
Who made that PC?
It was locally made by MicroWorks.
Okay. The first thing to do is talk to the folks at MicroWorks. Generally speaking, on Windows 10, driver updates happen automatically.
Mm-hmm. Through Windows.
Through Windows itself, generally speaking.
So it used to be you had to go, in fact, sometimes you still do, but you had to go to the manufacturer of each one of your components, motherboard, sound card, Ethernet card, video card, and then update them manually. But most of the time now, Windows, especially Windows 10 and 11, will do all that updating for you. The companies have said, all right, let's let Windows do it. That way people get it done.
The other thing, basically, unless you have an odd piece of equipment that you installed, Windows should handle all of it.
Automatically, or
mm-hmm.
Call on it for updating or anything like that?
Well, you go into Windows Update, and there's a checkbox to update third-party drivers.
Third-party drivers. So you can set that, just check it and see if it is, in fact, set. If it is not, check it. And if it is set, you've been doing it, you've been getting them all along.
Then it may be optionally turned on. And said, here are the drivers, then you click the install button.
Okay, that's interesting, because the notice came up in AVG, and they said I have three drivers that need updating, and I think I have to pay a premium to get that done with AVG.
Right, so, yeah.
Well, you should be able to I'd go to Windows Update and see if those same drivers are listed there as optional.
Yeah, I mean, they're just trying to, get money out of you.
They're happy to get money out of you, but if you head into Windows Update, you should be able to, A, see, as Steve said, see if they're optional, and B, make it not optional. Say, always update these.
Or these drivers that they're suggesting, do you really need them?
How do I determine that?
Well, that's where, if you go into Windows, check through Windows if the drivers are being updated.
Well, if it tells you there's a driver update for Lexmark printers, and you don't have a Lexmark printer, you don't need that driver.
Yeah.
But Windows has a lot of drivers pre-installed, so if you happen to do get that printer, the driver's already there.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay, thank you very much for the information, and again, very good advice.
All right, thank you. It gets to be a lot, and I admit that, particularly when we're talking about drivers in a machine that you did not build yourself.
Or is not a name brand machine. Which would have all the driver updates themselves.
Right. If you have a Dell, for example, I think it's Dell, you can go to their website, type in your serial number or your service number, and it'll tell you what all the drivers are and all the pieces and parts are that you need to make sure are always updated. And that's just one of the services you get with a name brand device. Now, I have a Dell computer, but because I put Linux on it, that's not useful to me. But for the normal person, that would be fine. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Marie from North Chi-Lai, New York. What's up, Marie?
Hi. First of all, I want to say I love your program.
Thank you.
It's usually over my head, but But I listen. I try to listen every week.
Thank you.
You're welcome, because you get some kind of general feel for what's going on in the tech world. So it's nice.
We hear from people that it sinks in by osmosis.
Mm-hmm.
And in 10 years, you'll understand it all.
for me, it might be 20 or, yeah, or 30. But yeah. But and I also I'm a member of Jazz 90.1, and
thank you.
And I would love to see people continue to donate, because otherwise, we might not have this.
That's exactly right. Thank you, Maria. Yet another unsolicited testimonial. Thank you.
So, I've been a member for years. So, my question is, something came up this week. My computer suddenly got attacked. I have Norton antivirus, but all of a sudden what triggered it was I got on Facebook, which I don't often do actually, but I was going to do something on Facebook, and then I saw this little article that looked like somebody's email or something, and it was talking about something and some people that didn't pay at a restaurant, and I wanted to find out what happened after that, so I clicked on it, and whoa, boy. So bells and whistles.
Yeah, most of the problems these days are not viruses. They're these malicious attachments and malicious notifications and ads.
Uh-huh.
So Norton caught it.
Well, I don't think.
No, not if it's a virus. Yeah,
no, yeah, if it's a virus, it might have, but if it's an ad, it wouldn't have. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'll finish. Yeah, I feel sorry for people that went for it, because it was very alarming. It was very, very loud beeping.
Yep.
And a very loud woman's voice threatening this and that, and they want you to call a number. So I had minor things like this happen before over the years, so I knew that I could just shut it down. But as I'm sure you all know, shutting down didn't do anything. It just kept coming back every time I went back. So I called Norton, and they took care of it. And then they spent like a lot of time going through all my stuff in there, and I thought everything was going to be fine. But what I want to ask you is, three things happened afterwards. The next day or two, I went back on Facebook, and I couldn't get in. And also, I'm on the Nextdoor neighborhood site, and I can't open the entries that are put in there anymore. And also, another weird thing that happened days later, all of a sudden I'm getting, every few minutes, I'm getting like a little pop-up from Skype, which I really don't use Skype anymore ever, but this was from Skype, and it was about trading, and I don't know, it was like a little bits of a conversation. So every few minutes, and I finally had to turn the sound off because it was running all day long, and I think it's still doing it today. I saw it today, but the sound is off. So I'm trying to decide what to do next. I could call Norton back and see.
No, you don't have to do
that. Well, that's my first fear is, did you really call Norton? Where did you get the phone number that you called?
I've had it for a long time, and I have called it before.
All right.
They did say, I asked him at the end, where are you? He said, I'm in India. They did go into my computer, and that's why I avoid calling them again.
Yeah, that's the fear.
The thing I would recommend,
because you've got so many more problems now and having pop-ups, I would suggest
to her that if she goes to our website, the Security Tango, and download Super Anti-Spyware and Malware Bytes, along with Revo Uninstaller. One, you can use Revo Uninstaller to uninstall Skype, if you don't no longer use that, and then run both Super Anti-Spyware and Malware Bytes, because what you have there is not what we viruses. You have what we call malware.
Malicious software.
And that they're trying to sit there and fake you out and throw these ads up there and tell you that this is wrong and that is wrong. And this would help keep that stuff off your machine. It's still important to have the antivirus software, by all means, but you need other programs to help get rid of that other stuff that's bothering your machine.
And I would suggest that you run Super Anti-Spyware and Malware Bytes first and see if they solve the program before you uninstall Skype.
Because it may not be coming from Skype. It may be a fake ad claiming to be Skype.
Yep, and they're trying to feed it to Skype.
Because the fake ads will use names of legitimate companies to make them sound more legitimate.
We often say
the more dire and alarmist the message is, the more likely it's fake.
And what it's really probably done is put some sort of cookie on your system.
Or startup folder, because restarted.
Yeah, the Norton guy said that he removed the cookies.
Yeah, okay. But at any rate, I would do those two things first and then do an uninstall of Skype if you need to. But I would start with those two products. And if all of that doesn't work, you're going to need to take it to somebody because they're going to have to do a deep dive, okay?
Okay, yeah, because actually I don't know if I can do... I'm not very good with tech.
So. Well, then you might just feel that bringing it to someone is your best choice.
A local
dealer.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Marie.
Thank you. Okay.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 59 minutes after the hour. It's the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Holy cow, that must mean it's Soundbites. Right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We're going to take a slightly longer break, take a bio break. We'll see you on the other side.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to the second hour of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'd just like to go back to Marie there. It sounds like she's got quite a bit of malware and that on there. And the reason we suggest two programs, folks, is like Steve was alluding to earlier in the hour, not one program can do it all. Whereas Malware Bytes and Super Anti-Spyware, one goes wide, the other one goes deep. And basically what they do is they go through using both of them, not at the same time, but one after the other. They'll go through and find all those other things that can hide in the registry. If you ever printed out your registry, it would probably go around your block and not get it all. Because every time you put a program on and take it off, it makes all these entries in there and keeping track of it on the Windows machine. So it's a lot of great places that spyware and malware can hide. Because for the most part, the program isn't being used anymore, so it can hide into those positions. And that's where Malware Bytes and Super Anti-Spyware will go through and look for all those hooks and pull them out. And that's where you can get some of the false ads or other misleading information that will pop up on your screen because they're sit there and sent, on time release to do their thing.
There was a new type of attack earlier this year, a notification attack. So you can go to a news website. And you can get a notification that you want to be updated with the latest news headlines. Oh, yeah, sure. Let me do that. Well, a malicious ad on that website can ask the same thing, and you say, oh, yeah, sure. And now you start getting hundreds of malicious notifications. Your McAfee needs to be updated. Your NORT needs to be updated. Your infected call this phone number coming as a notification. So it's not a program installed on your computer. It's a notification,
That you signed up for.
Yeah.
The other thing about the registry, when you remove a program, Microsoft does not remove the registry entry. It just marks it as no
longer
used.
Turns the bit off,
Which means I have seen some registries that were 2 gigabytes in size. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Gigabytes in size.
And
now, that's a little unusual, but not horribly unusual.
And then in the early days, there was a 2 gigabyte file size limit.
Right.
And computers would die because your registration got too big.
And that's why we have never, in all the years that we've been on the radio, ever told anybody how to go into the registry and make changes. We will not.
It's very dangerous.
Oh, unless you know exactly, and I mean exactly, what you are doing and confident, no, we will not.
One wrong character makes the machine unbootable.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Brick it.
And that's one of the nice things about Revo One Installer. It actually removes those entries from the registry. I have run Revo Uninstaller on a Windows machine, and it has said, you know, these, 11 entries are no longer being used. Do you want to get rid of them? Yes, please. And we've had people complain about their machine booting very slowly. Well, when you have to read through a 2 gigabyte file before you can start up, yes, that's going to be slow.
Oh, one thing I want to point out about Revo Uninstaller that a couple folks have asked me about.
Thank you.
And when you're running Revo Uninstaller, again, folks, I know folks get click happy and they go really fast through it. Well, and what they're not doing is when that first screen comes up and says, oh, we found all these entries. And there's 2 buttons there. One is to select all those items that it found. And then the next one is to delete next to it, to the right of it. Some folks are just hitting the delete button next to it, and it's not getting rid of those entries. Right. You got to first select all of them and then hit delete. And then it will then go through and ask you another series of questions on the folders. Same type of thing. On the left-hand side, it'll say, do you want to select all these? You say, yes, select them all. And then the button to the right of it is delete. That will get rid of them. Just hitting the delete does not get rid of them, and they'll still be there.
Got to select what you want to delete.
Because I had somebody call me and say, well, that program's broken. That doesn't work at all. They're still there. And I had to walk them through it. Oh.
Sometimes you may not want to have all selected by default. Sometimes you want to look through the list and make sure you really don't need them anymore.
Right.
But for the average home user, you're not going to know. So just go ahead and select all and delete.
Mm-hmm. Right. And for God's sake, don't delete anything that you don't understand. Certainly accept what Revo Uninstaller tells you you can uninstall, but don't randomly select other things. I don't know what this is, so I'm going to get rid of it. Now you can't boot your machine anymore because you got rid of a very important system file.
There was the antivirus scam going around for a while.
Right.
If you have a .ini file, that means you're infected, so delete them all.
And there was an ini file.
And that's fake. Don't do that.
Right. There was an ini file that looked like a teddy bear that had a teddy bear icon. They said, if you see the teddy bear, you're infected.
Yep.
Delete that file. And it meant that you could no longer boot your system.
Yep.
You got to be careful.
So, there's two types of bad guys. Those that just want to cause havoc, and others that want to steal your money.
Right.
And
latter are much more prevalent than the former.
If you're very unlucky, you get them both.
Yeah. Right. All right. We should go back to the phones. Our next caller, Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Hold on.
Oh, sorry. Excuse me. I beg your pardon.
You just got back in the chair.
Dave.
We need a better way to pass a piece of paper 10 feet.
This is the smallest studio I've ever been in my entire life, and yet Dave takes a while to get back to his chair. All right. And I shouldn't talk. I would be slower. I admit that. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark.
And I'm doing it one-handed, too.
That's true. Are you there, Mark?
Hey, I'm here.
Okay, what's up?
A little reminder with Revo.
a lot of people have to watch another thing when it runs and it goes to its uninstall. It uses the programs uninstall. It will sometimes ask to reboot the machine, and you have to say no.
Or later.
Do it later.
Yep.
Then run the rest of Revo, then reboot the machine on your own.
Because otherwise you could end up rebooting the machine 10 times for everything it deletes and take even longer.
Or it won't delete it at all, and they'll forget about it.
Right.
So
good point, Mark. Thank you.
Yep. Okay.
Very good point. Thank you.
Yep. Have a good one.
You too. Yeah, that's one of the things that you need to be aware of is that underneath Revo does use some Windows programs in the background, and that some of them will have choices that Revo doesn't make.
One cool thing about I bought the USB version. In other words, I can have it. I've carried it around on a USB stick. Because I've got a number of computers. I mean, just alone up in my ham room, I got four computers. So, you know, I've got a lot of them and then the few downstairs. So I put it on a USB stick. What's nice about the paid version is if I see, say, when I got that new computer upstairs and it had a whole bunch of programs on it that I wanted to get rid of, Revo uninstaller, the paid version, let me select all those programs at once and say, please remove all of them. And it took a little time, but it went through every one of them. Whereas the unpaid version, you got to do them one at a time. So it just one of the advantages, and it does have some other features, which I won't go into, but it's really a good program for removing stuff and not using the Windows uninstaller program because that does no good to your registry. It just makes it bigger, bulkier, and slower.
And sometimes the malware is so deeply ingrained in the computer, especially the registry, that you can't install the program in the computer to clean the computer that it's on.
Yep.
So having an external drive to boot from and clean things out can be a necessity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
All right. Two important things to say today. Today is Computer Security Day. So if you haven't checked your computer security lately, today's the day.
Mm-hmm.
You should do it all the time, but certainly today's the day.
It's cold out.
You're sitting inside, you don't want to go out in the wind and everything else, go ahead and check your computer for security. However, if you are going outside today, it is Small Business Saturday. So spend a little money in your community and keep some of those small businesses running. I know it is so easy to sit at your computer, make a couple of clicks, it gets delivered to your door. But that doesn't help your local community as much as going to Small Business Saturday to go small businesses on this day. So give that a little shot.
The irony is that Small Business Saturday was founded by American Express in 2010 because small businesses were notorious for not accepting American Express because their fees are too high.
They rather are.
Yeah. We, since we deal with a lot of businesses and large purchases and Amex corporate accounts, you know, we've ended up needing to take American Express.
For those of you who are tinkerers, we've been talking about that. There is a new and, I believe, thoroughly unauthorized version of Windows called Windows Moon Valley, release candidate 1 at the Internet Archive. It is, I believe, as I said, thoroughly unauthorized, but it is a kind of a cross between 10 and 11. Somebody put together all the best pieces of each one, and it's release candidate 1, so it's still beta software, essentially. It's one step up from beta, still not full release. But it's out there. It's only 6 gig in size.
Only 6 gigs.
Right, exactly. And so those of you who are interested in tinkering, it's based on Windows PE. You can download it, run it in a virtual machine, and see what you get, and be interested in seeing what you
throw
think.
Throw it on a Raspberry Pi.
Well, I don't know that it runs on a Raspberry Pi, but it certainly would run in a VM.
Or an Intel-based Raspberry Pi.
Yeah. Right. And they make them in non-Raspberry Pis. They're not Raspberry Pis. They're Intel-based processors, like the NUC and others of its ilk. But Moon Valley is around, and it's an interesting concept.
The new Mac Mini is the size of a NUC, 5 inches square. It's so set up one for a customer the other day. And she wanted a super drive. The CD drive is bigger than the mini. I had to put the computer on top of the super drive because it's smaller than the.
Oh, jeez.
Well, I've got a NUC, and it's tiny. It's tiny and it's powerful. In my case, it's an i5 processor. It's running my Plex server, which is my video streamer, and it never halts or. None of that stuff. It's way more than fast enough for that.
Basically, they're laptops without the screen and keyboard.
Exactly.
You distill it down to just that tiny motherboard and the battery. Inside your laptop, the motherboard is tiny.
Yep.
Because you don't need a battery, you don't need the screen, you don't need...
There is a company that makes a laptop case for a Raspberry Pi. You get the keyboard and the screen. It's all in one piece.
All in one?
And all you do is open up the back, throw your Raspberry Pi in it, and a hard drive of your choice, and you're done.
Is it called a Pi Top?
Yes, it is called a Pi Top, as a matter of fact. All right, well, you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. I will read the news. Another day, another attempt to steal your login credentials, this time courtesy of a phishing email that claims to be from Apple support. Don't be fooled, however, this isn't from Apple at all. It's actually an attempt to get you to click on a link so hackers can steal your login credentials and other sensitive information. This email, like many other phishing attempts, uses a lookalike formatting and other details to make you think it's coming from a legitimate source. This latest threat says that your Apple ID has been suspended due to unusual activity or missing or invalid information. The email looks remarkably similar to actual emails from Apple support, and contains a blue button that says, go to Apple ID. It also uses a sense of urgency in the message itself to get you to click, something along the lines of stating you'll need to verify your identity by clicking on the link to the fake Apple site and entering your username and password or other details to keep your account. It may even warn you that you can't access your account until you do so, or you may be permanently blocked if you don't comply within 24 hours. Act now, or forever hold your peace. However, this email contains many of the same red flags that other phishing emails do. The email address doesn't come from Apple.com, instead from UAEPass.AE. .AE means it comes from the Arab Emirates, by the way. Likewise, the grammar and tenses used throughout the message are stilted and read awkwardly, especially when read aloud. Quick side note, reading a suspected email aloud can be a first good way to deciding if it's legit. In order to avoid falling victim to this and other online scams, you need to be extra careful online, especially when checking your inbox. Some phishing emails can be very convincing, and if you're looking them over in a hurry, it's easy to let your emotions get the best of you. Instead, you need to look at every email in your inbox, both the suspicious ones and the ones that appear to be legitimate, carefully and with a discerning eye. For starters, always check the sender's email address and make sure it matches who it's supposed to be from. The email addresses used by Apple and other big companies are easy to identify by looking up the correct one online. Never click on a link that an unknown sender or otherwise suspicious link in an email. Read the email and watch out for poor grammar and common spelling mistakes. They're a major red flag and a dead giveaway that you may be dealing with a bad actor. You also want to make sure that you have multi-factor authentication enabled, so even if a hacker does get your credentials, they won't be able to log into your online accounts without your phone or other trusted device nearby. And, of course, use a password manager. How many things do you do? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
It used to be easier to tell fake email and messages and ads because of awkward grammar, bad spelling, things like that. But the bad guys are getting smarter, and they're using AI to get around some of those problems. But the most of the time, the return address won't be who it says it's from. So if you get a message about your Apple ID, it should come from apple.com,
right?
Not apple.ru or windows.net. I had one the other day that came from windows.net.
Nice.
About my Apple ID.
Cool.
And on a Mac, I'm think pretty sure on Windows and Unix too, if you point to a link and don't click it, you'll get a little, either a pop-up, hover bubble. Text or a little bubble, or sometimes in the status bar at the bottom of the window, will tell you where that link really goes. So the link says apple.com.
Right, that's for sure if you're using something like Thunderbird or Apple Mail.
Apple Mail, yep. Or most browsers, too. If you point to a link, it will tell you where it's really going before you click on it, so that you can see it's, if it's really going to who it says it's going to.
Well, that's one thing. Well, it's just literally around the corner now. I mean, the first is on tomorrow, and we start December, and we're going to see a lot more scams and everything else popping up out there, folks.
The fake shipping scams are starting.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get all these emails and voice messages and everything else that, you know, saying, well, you got to do this, you got to do that, or there's a problem with this. Like Nick has said a number of times, if you get a statement or a warning from your bank, there's this thing that most folks still have. It's called a phone.
Yeah.
And you can actually push the buttons on it, and it will dial up and call the bank actually.
Wait, what now?
Yeah, it will work.
Don't rely on the phone number or that's in the message, because
if you're that
fake.
Concerned, there's also this thing that most folks have is called a vehicle. You can actually drive to it, and they'll let you in the door if you have a bank account with them and sit down and discuss what's going on and resolve any issues that you might have.
What but won't they think of next? Yeah.
I know
the
it.
Messages are always scary and make you
intimidating.
Panic. Like the caller earlier that said a woman was yelling that, you know, your debt is going to be deleted. Oh my God, I don't want that to happen. Yep. I better click the link.
Yeah. Yep.
And they panic
and look,
you.
So again, I will say this again. Right now, while things are calm and you haven't got those notices on your screen, go find out the real phone number for your bank, the real email address for your bank, the real email addresses for some of the places that you normally go to. You know some
your
of them, apple.com, microsoft.com. For all your credit cards and all of that stuff, get the real, honest, true email addresses and phone numbers and write them down somewhere. Keep them handy somewhere. Put them in your password manager somewhere so that if you get one of these scams, you can, at the very least, if you get one of these notices, you can check against what you know is the correct number to see whether it's true. So I had that the other day, as a matter of fact. My hosting company, I had a renewal notice that came from some who knows where it was, but it is an unusual URL. It doesn't end in .com or .net or .org or any of that. So I did call, and they sent me through 7 levels of support before the guy said, oh, yeah, they're us. Okay, that's a legitimate email now. I can click on that link. He said, yes.
Companies get purchased.
Right. And that's what this was.
Yeah.
But I said, so I can actually click on that link and it'll be, yes. If it is from XYZ, that is legit. I said, yeah, okay. And the link went to XYZ.
Yep.
So I clicked on XYZ. I got a renewal notice, and I just today got a notice from my hosting company saying, congratulations, your website is online. You're all renewed. Everything is good. So it worked. It actually worked out. But I made the call. I know my hosting company's address. I know my hosting company's phone number. So when I made contact with them, I knew I was legitimately talking to them. And like I said, even their first and second and third and fourth and fifth and sixth level support did not know that they owned that other company.
Well, hey,
But the seventh level support guy did.
Followed through.
Yep, but they did send me up the chain, and I never got disconnected, so that was nice.
And that's a very common fake scam email you get now, is that your hosting renewal is due or your domain registration is due. And the bad guys just go through the Whois list, and, oh, their registration, even if it's not due, they'll send you an email saying your registration is due, and you go, oh, okay, I better pay it then.
I get those six, eight times a week, and I know that my stuff all auto-renews.
Yep.
Except for this one.
Yeah. Well,
and now it does. Now that it's part of this other company, it does.
And that type of scam goes back ages. Yeah. There was a big thing with printer toner scams, where a company would get a call from, how, you know, this is your toner supplier. It's time to order a new toner. Yep. Can I have a credit card number, please? Oh, okay.
Yep.
Yeah, they do it, and then because folks didn't take the time, and it's like, wait a minute. We still have that printer?
We don't have that printer.
Or toner? Or copier?
They're on contract anyway, and the company supplying or servicing your printer sends you the toner and then installs it many times, because that was the service contract you had for these big printers that are common in businesses.
All right, we've got time at least for the question of Jim from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Jim?
I tell you, my philosophy of this whole thing is that I routinely delete everything. All those things that look like a scam, because I figure if they're real, I'm going to hear about them from another source. So when they think this is going to run out of that, I routinely erase them all, because I figure if it's legitimate, I'm going to hear about it from another source.
That's a good thought. Good philosophy, Jim.
A lot of times the companies will postal mail you something about renewal or registration. Because so far, postal fraud is illegal,
right?
And it's easier to catch someone with postal fraud, but that's a good way to do it, Jim.
Yeah, there's so many times that my subscriptions have run out, I can't believe it. But I ignore them all.
Yep, I get it. Good
thanks a lot.
Way to do it. Thank you, Jim. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Look, anything that's legit, they're gonna try again. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with phone calls.
Or you just get the next fake one from a different company.
Well, yeah. It's the same thing with phone calls. Mm-hmm. If I don't know the number, I don't answer.
Yeah.
If it's important, they'll call back.
Mm-hmm. The problem is...
Actually, nowadays, I let Google answer for me.
And then see the voice to make sure it is really the... Because the bad guys will spoof the phone numbers, and you think it's someone you know.
I have my Google phone screen everything. And like you say, if you don't show up in my phone list...
Yep.
It gets screened and leave a message.
We had a customer once call us and say, people are calling me angry that I'm sending them junk email and fake phone calls. What can I do? Nothing.
Nothing. That's right.
So your number happened to get picked.
I did get I screened one call and it said, GD, and I got a new phone. Call me. Okay. That's all right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Give us a call. We got another half hour of this nonsense to fill. We'll see you in just a couple of minutes.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. I was just listening intently to the. Weather forecast. I will be at market tomorrow because it's a market Sunday. I'll be at my wife's stand. And if it's cold, I'm not going to be happy. And it's going to be cold.
Yeah.
Drink lots of coffee.
That's the plan.
You might be able to find some there at the market.
Somewhere. There must be some somewhere. The other thing is there's only 37 votes in the poll. Now, you folks have shown that when you think the poll isn't working, you go there by the thousands.
Yeah.
And this one's simple. Is Google a monopoly? There's a yes and there's a no.
Check it out and see if it's broken.
Check it out and just see if it's broken. All right. Let's go. Microsoft.
No, we got...
We got somebody on the line. Oh, we've got somebody. That's right. We've got somebody on the line. We've got Bill from Fairport on the line. What's up, Bill?
Well, I've got a couple quick questions. One is, what is the difference between Revel Registry Cleaner and Revel Uninstaller?
You're the Revo guy.
Yeah, I just use Revo Uninstaller. That's cleaning the registry.
Okay, I didn't know if there were other features in...
Probably.
Well, Revo, what it'll do is... Let me best explain it this way. One, we use Revo Uninstaller because it cleans out the registry and your hard drive. It actually does two things. It's removing remnants of a program. So what you can do is with Revo Uninstaller, say you've got a bunch of programs that you no longer use on your computer. Like we had one caller Skype. Person called and they no longer use Skype, or they might not use Google Word anymore because now they're using Google Docs. Well, I can select those two, and Revo Uninstaller will remove the icon off your desktop, and then it'll go through the registry and remove all references to those two programs in the registry. It will then go through your hard drive and search through any references again of those and folders of those two programs and ask you if you want to delete those. Thus, you're keeping the registry a lot slimmer and cleaner because there's not those things that it has to go through when, you know, it starts up, and it's not taking up space on your hard drive.
So it looks like the registry cleaner just looks through the registry, and the uninstaller actually uninstalls programs.
Yep.
Right.
Okay.
It's interesting they sell them both separately.
Good. Yeah, I mean, technically, you know, the Revo uninstaller is doing both automatically. Unless they just want to keep the program still on their machine, but keep the registry, cleaned out.
Well, and Revo Cleaner also can tune the registry,
yep.
Which I don't know the Revo Uninstaller does, and it does do a complete backup, but I think Revo Uninstaller does as well.
Yep. That answer your question?
It's interesting that the cleaner costs more than uninstaller.
Yeah, so. I would just use the uninstaller personally.
Yeah.
Because there's always a danger cleaning the registry that something gets
too much.
Pulled out wrong.
Yeah.
Even though Revo is a well-known good brand, 70% off for Black Friday.
That's exactly what I was looking at. I was going to probably go with the Pro.
The Pro is nice if you get the US. If you got multiple computers, I wound up getting the USB version, and then that way you can put it on a flash drive, and you can just put it into either say a laptop or your desktop. And, you know, run it around the house depending on how many computers you want. You only had to pay for it one time and keep all the machines clean.
Now, that's rude. I think I'm going to go. Second question I have for you.
Mm-hmm.
I've got, besides Windows machines, I've got a Mac Pro. And I just did the update to whatever the latest and greatest is. And now I find that my Dropbox links don't work. I've tried to reinstall Dropbox, and the links still don't work. Any thoughts on that?
Apple changed the way cloud drives are connected. It used to be just a folder on your computer. And so in your home folder was your Dropbox folder. And the Google Drive folder, the OneDrive folder, they did this for all of the cloud services. They changed it to I don't even know what you call it. It's a network file system where the other end is on the internet. Mm. It should have automatically picked that up, but you may need to go into the preferences and repoint it to your previous Dropbox folder.
Okay.
Which should be in your home folder.
All right. Can I ask a third question?
You can ask it.
All right. Yeah. I have a laptop that decided not to boot anymore, so I'm thinking that it's probably got a corrupted disrupted boot sector.
Does it light up at all?
Yeah, it does, but it just stops.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, okay.
So what I'm thinking about doing is, and part of it is so I can access the drive because it. Even though I backed up all the data on it, I still want to get to it and just verify to put Linux on a USB stick and actually try that since I've never tried it. Will that allow me to access existing files that are on that drive and bypass the boot sector?
Yes. You should be able to...
Probably.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah, that's why I said should.
Won't guarantee it.
You should be able to see, well, okay, on every time I've done this, it did work. I have heard of times when it didn't. But the theory is you should be able to, when you boot up from the thumb drive, and remember, that will be terribly slow because everything on the thumb drive is compressed. But once it's booted up, you should see on your desktop a folder that says home. You may see one that says drive, but if you don't, you can open up the home folder. And generally speaking, on the right, you'll see, excuse me, on the left, you'll see a series of choices, one of which will be that hard drive itself.
Or if he just wants
you should be able to click on it and see the folders. And then in the folders, you would be at the root directory. So you'd go under user. If you're using Windows, you go into user and then Windows and et cetera, et cetera.
If that hard drive is dead, you can just pull it out, put in a new hard drive.
Well, right. But the point is, if it's not dead, if it's just the boot sector's corrupted, right. He would be able to see it and pull the data off it. Which
well,
is
what
he
I was
going to
suggest is you can get the cables now that once you pull that old hard drive out and put in a new one, you can then, with that cable, I think they're only...
Well, SATA to USB adapter. Anyway,
yeah, and you just plug it into the USB, it'll boot up as a side drive, then you can use that, once he gets his data back, he can wipe that out and use it as a backup drive.
Right.
There's a difference between if it's bad files on a good drive or good files on a bad drive.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
So, and if the boot sector is corrupted, then Windows won't be able to boot. What's that terminal command? MBR something or other to correct a boot sector.
Yeah.
Right. But that may not work. You don't really want to do that if you don't have a backup.
Yeah.
Right.
So if the drive spins at all, right, if the drive spins but doesn't, but the boot sector is corrupted, then what you're planning to do will work. If the drive is dead, of course, it won't work.
And a good way to do that, too, is depending on the laptop, if there's a cover, say, underneath that you can, remove, that you can see the hard drive, and then that way, when you turn it on, you can put your hand on it and see if you feel the thing spin up.
Yeah, and I've actually got a smaller hard drive that I swapped out for the larger one I have in there now.
Okay.
And if it's critical information, you don't have backups of it, something like SpinWrite might be able to repair the drive enough to get back into it.
Right, but try the USB stick first. If you're comfortable doing that, it should be able to read the drive, which means that you could then throw another drive on your machine in some way, whether it's a thumb drive or whatever, and copy all the data off to that.
Yeah, now as I say, I've got that data backed up, but it's just... thinking about another toy to play with.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, another toy to play with. Man after my own heart. Exactly.
One other quick question, going back to my Mac.
Right.
I've got a NAS, a Buffalo NAS, that I've got on my network. And it's not seeing that right now. Is that part of the same problem?
Maybe. How old is the NAS?
About 3 years.
Maybe not. Later Mac OS's have removed support for SMB version 1. Windows has removed support for SMB version 1, so you have to use SMB version 2 or 3. If the NAS only supports version 1, then it won't be accessible anymore. You may have to look in the NAS manual to see about maybe turning off. Well, you got to do it from a machine that can see it. turning off SMB version 1 and making sure version 2 is turned on.
Not in that order.
Yeah.
Because I am using their software.
Yeah, they have a utility that you can use. I know. I remember Synology and several of the other NAS hardware companies had problems when Windows started deprecating version 1. Apparently, there's a lot of critical faults in version 1. Version 1 was, 40 years ago, and version 2 was 30 years ago.
Right.
But everyone still used version 1 because it was there.
Right.
So now the OSs have stopped using version 1.
All right, Bill, I'm afraid we got to move on. We got people piling up.
No. I appreciate all the help. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Bill. Yeah, it's, if you're gonna use a NAS, version 2 at least. Yeah. Is where you want to be, and it really matters where whether what your device will actually do. So read the documentation. I know that's a very painful thing to hear, but read the documentation and see where that takes you.
So Buffalo says all current NAS drives support version 2,
right?
But I can't see when they started doing that. So it may be trying with version 1 and can't make the connection. If you turn off version 1, then it may default to version 2. And if you really have it, go to version 3.
Yeah, right. All right. Now that I've learned to type again, we're going to talk to Dennis from Rochester, New York. What's up, Dennis?
I recently purchased Revo Uninstaller Pro, and it's a good product. However, one of my uninstalls failed, and it said there were quite a few leftover items, but it was unclear to me how I find those leftover items and get rid of them with Uninstaller Pro. Does Dave have any ideas?
No, because I've never had it. You know, what do you know? What program it didn't or that it stopped at?
It was uninstalling Acronis True Image 2020, and then at the end it said left over quite a few folders, quite a few registry entries, and
did the rest of that statement though say it couldn't do it right now, that you had to reboot?
No, it didn't say that. It says something about I forgot what the thing was. Go to such and such, and then select scan, but I just can't remember the.
Okay, so Dennis, the idea is when you get an error message, write it down and then follow the steps. In this case, what it sounds like it wants you to do is go back to the beginning and do another scan.
Yeah.
And it will find the items that are now orphaned.
They could have been locked at the time you were trying to remove them. And Windows, if they're, you know, in the locked position, just won't release them.
Right. And I would, if you haven't rebooted since you got that error message, I would reboot. And then I would,
Re-scan.
I would do another scan and see what you see.
Okay.
Yeah, because, like I say, those particular items might have been tied to other programs and they had locks on them.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, guys.
Let us know. Thanks, Dennis. And people, please, write down the error message.
Or take a picture of it with your phone.
If it gives you steps, follow them. Generally speaking, that's the way they work.
One side item I want to just talk about was about a month ago or so, I recommended that Envato Quadra. What it is, it's like a little Raspberry Pi. And what it does is it will, you want to put that website up?
Yeah.
What it does is for ham operators, it does what they call the ham clock. And you could buy it for a really good price. But unfortunately, and I had a couple folks email me and ask about it. Unfortunately, right now, the gentleman that developed that product and was manufacturing it has had to step back for a while because he's going under some very severe surgeries and health concerns right now. So he's had to step away from it. I mean, it's a great product. It came in this little box, and all you had to do was literally plug it into a monitor, and it would network connection. It gave you all that stuff to hook it up, and you could get a full globular view of the world and, like, track satellites and, you know, weather and everything else. But for us ham operators, what was going on as far as the bands. And that, unfortunately, that clock, you know, or that little device right now isn't going to be available for the holidays, or it was and, had very limited.
Both the bundle and the bundle with keyboard are sold out.
Yep. Because and will not be back for some time as he deals with his health issues.
So it says on the website that it makes a beautiful gray line map.
Yeah.
What's a gray line map?
Gray line map is the sunset for ham operators.
When it's gray?
Yeah, literally.
The transition point.
Yep. Yep. And
I didn't know that had a name.
Typically, when you're following signals and you want to make contact, if you're hitting the gray line, sometimes you can hit halfway around the world going both the long, what we call the long distance or the short distance on very low power. I mean, I've heard people running only 20 watts and talking to people in Australia right now on 10 meters because they're following what we call the gray line. And through a ham radio, they're talking very clearly for folks around the world.
The signal bounces around because the temperatures are changing.
Yep.
So as it gets colder, the atmosphere kind of shrinks down a little bit.
And right now, the storms, we're coming up. For folks that don't know, the sun goes through what they call a 10-year cycle.
8-year.
22.
10. Technically, we call it a 10-year cycle. And next year, we're at the top of it. 2025 is going to be the peak of this. And then we start going down, and the bands start falling off. And this has been the most active year so far in a long time that they've been keeping track.
Next year will be worse.
No, it's going to be better.
Oh, you knew
it should be for as far as spots and getting around. Yeah, there's going to be more sunspots.
Right.
Hopefully, we don't have major flares. We did have one just last week that if you folks are using GPS devices and all that, or even on your own cell phones, they might have cut out.
Yep.
And your internet might have cut out. It's all due to the sunspots. And there's been some really big sunspot storms and causing blackouts. And the other side of that, too, with the activity, it's been great for us ham operators. Just so.
Yep. So we're currently in solar cycle 25.
Mm. Good for us.
The 25th cycle since 1755 when they started naming them.
Tracking them.
Yeah.
Right. Every week, when I put together the news.
Every week?
Every week, when I put together the news, I wonder if I'll have enough stuff to talk about. And I see what Microsoft has going on. On Monday, Microsoft experienced an outage of Exchange Online, Teams, and SharePoint Online.
Again?
The main outage lasted for 9 hours, but there were lingering effects over the next 24 hours. According to Microsoft, it was caused by a distributed denial of service or DDoS attack. On Tuesday, ESET published a report into previously unknown Windows vulnerabilities that were chained with a similar unknown browser vulnerability to successfully attack PCs. Both threats have now been patched, and Windows users need to ensure that their PCs are fully updated. But if your PC comes off support, this is exactly the kind of threat that you won't be protected against. There are still 850 million Windows 10 users, plus another 50 million on even older versions of the OS, who will not be protected against this latest threat, or the ones that come after it. Microsoft now blocks the Windows 11 24H2 update. They're blocking their own update. on computers with USB scanners that support the ESCL or e-scanner communication language protocol, a driverless scanning protocol that works over Ethernet, Wi-Fi, and USB connections. Now, this is scanning the Wi-Fi, scanning the USB ports, not, in your case, a scanner.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is something that scans the ports.
Mm-hmm.
The list of impacted devices includes standalone scanners and other devices with scan functionality, such as multifunction printers, fax machines, modems, and other network devices with ESCL protocol support, including a lot of medical equipment. This newly acknowledged issue is caused by the device not switching from ESL to USB mode, which causes which allows the scanner drivers to be matched. So it scans for them, and then it can't switch to USB mode to match them. So it keeps scanning for them and never matches and never it mounts them.
Less than a minute remaining.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again.
Over and over and over. And finally, Microsoft has shared a new method to fix a bug preventing app uninstalls or updates on Windows 10 for those unwilling to deploy this month's previous update. As they acknowledged on Thursday, some users have been unable to update or uninstall packaged applications like Microsoft Teams or other third-party apps after receiving the WinApp SDK 1.6.2 package on their Windows 10 22H2. Those affected see the "something happened at our end" message, error message, in the Microsoft Store's downloads panel. The fix, apparently, is to install the new Windows SDK 1.6.3 update three times. That's right. Do the exact same thing three times.
And maybe it'll get right?
The third time, it will magically work. Honest. How often do you install the same update? Give us a call, 585-96. Don't give us a call right now. You can call. You just won't get on until after the break.
No, we're done.
This is the end of the show.
This is a really, really long break.
This is the this is the long 166-hour break. But I that amuses the heck out of me. Install it three times. It'll work, we promise.
And you want us, they want us to really have confidence in them to go everything up in the cloud. And if, if by chance they get hacked and, they're held for ransom.
Right.
All those computers that are now up in the cloud can't do jack squat.
Well, and that's the Windows Lite thing, which I forget the name of. The Windows Lite, which is a Windows 12 Lite, I think it's called, which is a version that only runs on, essentially, it's a thin client. It only talks to the web, and it only does very certain things. And now, again, 90% of the people will, that'll be okay for them. But, again, it's not your machine, it's their machine. All right, we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank everybody who called in. I'm Nick Francesco. Please vote in the poll. We've only got 46 votes, and I know you can do better because you did that one week. So please vote. It's a basic yes-no kind of question. So it should be to take less than 10 seconds of your time. And we will see you. Listen, be good to one another this week, will you? We will see you in just 166 hours on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.